Recorded as part of the Home of Metal Heritage Tour walk for Capsule in March 2009. All speech content copyright Chris Fitz, 2009. You're in Chamberlain Square, in between Victoria and Centenary Square. You should be able to see Central Library, Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, and the light grey building, surrounded by pillars, is Birmingham Town Hall.
Behind us we've got Birmingham Town Hall, based on the temper of Castor and Pollux in Rome. And in the 1960s, Robert Plant got in here. Sabbath, Zeppelin, Judas Priest all started mainly as blues bands. They were blues obsessives. I would see Dave Clemson out of a band called Bakerloo Line Blues Band, who went on to Humble Pie. I would see him with an Elmore James album, standing by the bus stop, tucked under his arm. All these young musicians were getting into a legendary record shop just down that street called the Discory. They'd be getting in there for the latest Sonny Boy Williamson album that would come out, the latest Elmore James album that would come out. And they would come here, because here they would be able to see, direct from the Delta, direct from Chicago, American folk blues artists. Robert Plant actually came to see Sonny Boy Williamson here. Obviously, it was built as a sort of civic amenity for music. So you got all these young would-be musicians getting inspiration from seeing blues and jazz artists here. Obviously, Sabbath played here. There's a photograph of them, I think, in the second or third Paranoid album, Gatefold. I think it's them performing at Birmingham Town Hall. Zeppelin played here. Uriah Heep recorded their legendary live album here. And it's very interesting. Very similar is Newcastle City Hall, where I live now. Richie Blackmore has told me that Purple, who I saw here, Purple here, 67, 68, nearly demolishing the place when they played Ring That Neck. Blackmore says that these and civic halls are still favoured by bands because of the incredible acoustics. That, you know, I don't know whether it's because he bounces off the civic organ at the back and wooden. My memories of this place, when I used to come here to see Purple and Sabbath and Captain Beefheart, all sorts of people, it always had a curious smell, mixture of gas and orange peel, which you used to get in theatres. But this is where you saw your musical influences, and when you were making it, this is where you would come and play.
You walk along the left-hand side of the building. To your left is Anthony Gormley's Iron Man, designed to represent the city's industrial past. It's seemingly thrown into the ground by the gods of rock. You continue straight ahead to the pedestrian crossing at the top of Hill Street. Wait by the pedestrian crossing at the top of Hill Street.
On the corner here, where that sign says Victoria's, was the most amazing Art Deco pub. Amazing black. It was called the Golden Eagle. And there was the most incredible Golden Eagle, sort of, I think it would be Deco design. I think it's listed now. It's not dissimilar to the eagle that Saxon use on their stage set, and Priest, the one on Screaming for Vengeance, that type of eagle. And there was this incredible gold gilt spiral staircase that you made your way up to. But obviously it was a Big Ansel's boozer, Big Ansel's pub. But it was a jazz club. It was called the Blue Chapel Jazz Club. Then it was called the Pokey Hole Jazz Club. And you would get a very young Steve Winwood playing in there I think it was the Savannah Jazz Band. I can't quite remember. Winwood was so young when he played there. He was still at school. He was in short trousers. And they used to have to smuggle him in behind the piano so that he was straight out of school, so that they didn't see his shorts on. And then he would, you know, this is a 16-year-old kid with short trousers suddenly singing like Ray Charles. Robert Plant would pick up on this. He was a big fan of Winwood and his vocal styling. Plant jammed with Alexis Corner at the Golden Eagle. Alexis Corner, another great father figure of British blues. Again, he would apprentice singers like Mick Jagger. With he had a band called Alexis Corner's Blues Incorporated. A young Mick Jagger would get up and sing with him at the Marquee. A young Robert Plant would get up there and sing with him and do a couple of numbers. There is a recording of Plant singing with Alexis Corner, but it's from the Marquee in London. Years later, Plant would perform here with a band called the Honey Drippers, which was Robert Plant's side rock and roll blues project with outside Led Zeppelin. They would play there. So the Golden Eagle really reigns supreme as one of these gigs which was rammed, you know, absolutely fantastic venue. I'm very, very sad that I would think now it would be listed sheerly by its architecture.
Cross over the pedestrian crossing and walk down Hill Street. Stop at the next pedestrian crossing. Over the pedestrian crossing into John Bright Street, with Gala Casino on your left. One fine day I'm gonna be the one to make you understand.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be your man. So here we are, this is John Bright Street. Unbelievably, the Wardour Street of Birmingham. I would insist that my mother caught a bus that would take us along here so I could see the posters for Godzilla, because every major film company had an office here. Disney used to be round the corner there.
You take the first right on Lower 7th Street. Stop at the red brick building by West Side.
There was also a club up here, I think it was called Rebecca's. I mean, again, I'm talking about, overemphasise the influence of blues and the whole blues boom which metal grew out of here in the Midlands. In there I saw Howlin' Wolf. I'll never forget Howlin' Wolf, who was basically physically this massive figure of a man. singing in what they used to call the Dracula vibrato. And I also saw, more significant in terms of Zeppelin, a stand-up bass player called Willie Dixon. It was just a burgeoning scene of jazz and blues. You know, these guys straight out of Chicago's Maxwell Street, playing in there about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Go round the corner, in between the West Side Building and the Red Brick Building.
Well, I'm a poor boy, long way from home. Well, I'm a poor boy, long way from home. No spending money in my pocket, no spare meat on my bone.
At the end of the road, go left. And then when you go left again, you're on the bottom of John Bright Street.
Now people ask me, what does a poor boy...
Look at the building on the right with the two flags on it. But if it's evening time, you might not want to stare too hard.
Now, we move on to Sabbath matters. This is the old Futurist cinema. I think is it now pole dancing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Allegedly, yes. I don't know what goes on in these places anyway. I've only heard. Anyway, the Futurist cinema was my sort of... It was an independent cinema. And it was run by a marvellous guy called... traditional manager called George, who, whatever film he had on, he would always qualify it. He'd phone me up. And he would say, when I was at the BBC, right, this week we've got on Jubilee by a bloke called Derek Jarman. He says, Gone with the Wind it ain't, but it's still a great film. Every film he showed, Gone with the Wind, it wasn't. Wonderful traditional manager. This is where they used to have five-day turnaround horror film shows on here. You got two B pictures per day. The film made by Mario Bava, Black Sabbath, was shown here regularly. So it is either here that your lads were walking past and said, Tony would say, here, geezer, it's funny how people will pay to see a load of horrifying shit, have the shit scared out of them. Funny, isn't it? Why don't we call ourselves Black Sabbath? So it's either looking in there, watching the film in there, or the Gala Cinephone. They definitely rehearsed here, and they definitely rehearsed along Bristol Street. You know, this is the saga of... You know, the saga of the great John Bright Street. I just hope that the architecture in there is preserved, because it was the most fantastic cinema inside. But the rest's history. Right, we're now going to move on to the hub of the Sabbath story. We can get to Station Street this way, can't we?
Go right down John Bright Street towards the Victoria Pub. Follow the Victoria Pub round to the left. When you come to the end of the road, you should be able to see the Crown Pub.
Is he alive or dead? As he goes within his head, we'll just pass in there. Why should we even care?
Stand at the corner of Station Street and look up at the Crown Pub.
this is really the hub of the wheel of the heavy metal story. On the first level there, in the Crown, every Monday or Tuesday night, it would turn into Henry's, a place called Henry's Blues House. They would bring over the solo artist, and they'd get a pickup band here. There was a band that seemed to back everybody who came over, called the Shuffling Hungarians. I never knew who they were, but they were, you know, really good backing band. I saw a guy here called J.B. Hutto. This guy was taught, had been taught by Elmore James how to play slide in Chicago. And here he was, playing here. And this is the... I remember they had a guy on called Dr. Ross, the harmonica boss, who was like that height with a big peak cap on and a double smart double-breasted suit. And he came in, laid down with his suitcase. And when he opened the suitcase, all these harmonicas, he put, just sort of spilled out. And there was a guy called Lightning Slim, I think he was called, and they'd spent all afternoon buying him a new zip-up cardigan at CNA, of which he was extremely proud of, buying to come on stage. But every so often, there'd be a band playing here, and it was a five-piece, including a saxophone, called Earth. I'm not going to bullshit you and say, you know, I knew, you know, they were going to be big and they were going to be metal. All I can remember was they weren't extraordinarily loud, right? And whether there was something about them or not, I don't know. There's no point in me trying to develop myths, you know, when they don't exist at all. But that is where Black Sabbath basically started off from. That's where they changed the name to Black Sabbath, up in that room there.
Go right at the Crown Pub, and a short distance on the left is a car park. Stand at the edge of the car park and look down to the dual carriageway. Beyond the dual carriageway, beyond the traffic lights, is Hurst Street.
Down Hurst Street was the record shop, the Discory, and people's tastes were literally transformed when you went in there. The Discory was run by a guy called Morris Huntings, a guy called Jimmy Shannon, and a guy called Erskine Thompson, who went on to manage Lenny Henry. And you'd go in one day and he'd say, you know, you're still listening to the Drifters and Atlantic, you know, try this, and it would be Isaac Hayes or Miles Davis, Bitches Brew, something like that. But again, everybody who was into, you know, Priest, Sabbath, all members of all these bands, and you know, we've missed bands out, Magnum, Quartz, bands like that, all also rounds, very, very important. All these guys would be getting in there for to get the albums of the music that influenced them. The Discory now, obviously, is in Bromsgrove Street. Hippodrome, some rock there. Saw Styx there, supported by an unknown band then called Dire Straits. And then, obviously, up onto the Ringway, you had the Mayfair, or I think the Locarno, which was known, when they had rock bands on, it became, suddenly it was the Kinetic Circus for a night. Zeppelin played there, and then obviously round the corner, Birmingham Odeon, incredible list of metal and rock gigs, too long to list. But, you know, I hope that's given you some insight of what went to make up metal and the way that it came out of this fair city. You know, it's all pockets of influence, places to play. Just basically a massive great cook pot of all these influences, creating the music really that's as popular and influential in its way as hip hop. And I'm very glad, I mean, it's great to see all the bands I've talked about, all out there, all doing it. And really, this is quite fitting to close here, because when you played your gig in Birmingham, where did you come to for your fleur-de-lis pie and your pot of tea? Here, Alex's, I think it was called a snackery, wasn't it, or the eatery, but there was a mobile food stall here, and there'd be Bev and Robert Plant, everybody, all swapping stories about whether they'd been ripped off, who they'd been playing for. They'd all be gathered just here, you know, where you are standing, where Robert Plant, Tony Iommi would all swap stories. I believe it's here that Plant said, I've been contacted about joining a band called the New Yardbirds, Tony, should I take the job or not? And I think Tony said, yeah, I think you should. And the rest's all history.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face.